Start your engines, y'all. We have a new episode of Drama with the winner of RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars Season 10, Ginger Minj. Can you believe it? Connor and I have loved Ginger forever, and she's truthfully always been a dream guest for us because she brings the drama. She's a theater girl, and this was the perfect opportunity for us to sit down and chat with her. Obviously, she was amazing. I won't take up too much of your time before we jump into this episode, but I wanted to let you know that if you love hearing the twins chat, we do have extra bonus episodes that are released twice a month, at least, on our bonus content platform, which we affectionately call Drama Plus, over at patreon.com/thedramapodcast. That's $5 a month, and you also get added to our Instagram close friends. And if you don't have the money right now, but you want to help support the pod in other ways, please, please follow us on social media. We're at The Drama Podcast on Twitter. I'm still refusing to call it X. Instagram. And then we're at The Drama Pod on TikTok, where we actually release extra video clips from every single episode. But if social media is not your thing, you can always just rate and review us on your favorite podcast app. Of course, we're partnered with iHeartRadio Broadway, but I know people listen all over the place. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, is Stitcher still a thing? Anyways, we hope you have as much fun with this episode as we had recording it with Ginger. Check out her tour, Hocus Pocus Live. We have all the information below. And of course, we'll continue to see you every single Wednesday this fall with more drama. All right, let's get on with the show.
Press play.
Curtain of an hour in.
It's time to take spin.
The shade and tea
to spill.
Ooh, drama.
Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book?
Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today?
Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
Drama.
Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell.
Dylan, you're wearing a very me outfit. It's kind of shocking. Don't you feel?
You've inspired me. Yeah.
No, I don't know. It's like the blue with the white undershirt. Actually, it's low-key our podcast art.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of it. But to be fair, I have approximately 4 shirts that look just like that, that I switch in and out of. So anyway, yeah. It looks great on
It's
me.
Like that old adage, like if you love something and it comes in one color, get it in every color. That kind of vibe.
No, for real. You look youthful.
Thank you. Oh my God. That ordinary under eye serum has been working that I've been doing all summer. But listen,
period.
Summer is coming to an end. Fall is upon us. I know you said it's been feeling like fall in New York lately. It hasn't quite hit that here in Columbus yet.
Have the Halloween decorations been out? Have the pumpkin spice themed recipes hit the cafes? You're ready?
I'm drinking a pumpkin Tim Hortons coffee this morning.
Really? See, I kind of need to wait till a little bit into September to get pumpkin with it.
I'm ready.
You are?
Yes.
I love it. Well, Dylan, our guest that we have on the show today is certainly promoting something spooky season themed.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also catching them at truly a legendary moment in their life and career, our lives and careers even. I mean,
yes,
they just won something big.
It's major.
They've had our hearts for years, which I want to actually tell them the story.
In our house, they've been winning for years. Let's put it that way.
In fact, there was half a summer where we were binge watching Season 7 of RuPaul's Drag Race. Our first season. It was 2017. And we were, you know, just slowly making our way through, convinced that our guest today was the winner. Like, we were like, convinced. We didn't want spoilers, so we had no clue.
There's no other option.
There was no other option. We were just gagged. And then it was spoiled for us.
During Pride weekend, actually.
During Pride. That didn't quite work out, but worked out now, baby.
It did. I'm foaming at the mouth. Let's just jump right in.
Yes.
Our guest today is an internationally beloved drag entertainer, singer, writer, producer, and director. Oh yeah, and she's the newly minted winner of RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars 10. Known as the Glamour Toad, this queen won our hearts as a finalist on some of the most iconic seasons of Drag Race, including Season 7, All-Stars 2, and All-Stars 6. Even before The Crown, her global reign has included touring around the world, releasing 4 studio albums, and her memoir/cookbook entitled Southern Fried Sass. On screen, she's made memorable turns in Dumplin', Hocus Pocus 2, The Bitch Who Stole Christmas, AJ and the Queen, Super Drags, Drag Me to Dinner, and countless videos, web series, and projects. On stage, she's been celebrated for her comedic timing, powerhouse vocals, and Broadway-ready presence in Golden Gals Live, The Broad's Way, The Munsters Live, and many celebrated one-woman shows, including her long-running Provincetown residency, which she's currently starring in. Theater credits include La Caja Fall, Sweeney Todd, The Rocky Horror Show, Avenue Q, Chicago, and more. And beginning September 4th, she will embark upon a witchy and wonderful 22-city tour alongside friend of the pod, Jujubee, and Safira Cristal in Hocus Pocus Live. This spellbinding tour was written, directed, and co-produced by our fabulous guest. We got her, gal. Please welcome to drama, Ginger Minj.
Oh, wow. What an intro. That's incredible. Did you write that or did you find that on the internet?
I will say Robbie sent us a version of your bio that I cherry picked and...
That's brilliant. Oh my gosh. I'm going to have to transcribe this.
I'll send it to you.
I like that.
I'll send it to
you. Thank you. Even I was hyped that I was here by that intro. That was so good.
Oh my gosh.
I love it. Wait, Ginger, we have to tell you, we spent half a summer convinced that you won season 7 of Drag Race. It was our first season ever. And we were like, this is our girl.
You know, it's so funny. It's really funny because a lot of people felt that way at that time, but I never felt that way. Like in the room, in person, I knew that I had done really well. I had accidentally done a lot better than I ever intended to on season 7. But when it got to the end and everybody in the world, even the ones that hated me, were like, well, yeah, but she's just going to win. She's going to win. In my head, I was like, I don't think so. I just don't feel it in the universe. And I never kind of felt it cosmically until this season, 10 years later.
That's kind of magical. I guess it was all meant to be in the long run. And congratulations, by the way.
Yes, congrats.
Thank you.
What do you mean when you said you accidentally did well on season 7?
So you talk about Jujubee. Jujubee is actually, it's her fault that I was ever on Drag Race in the first place. I had done a gig with her. I had never met her before. And we were both being honored by the Gay and Lesbian Youth Alliance of Hoboken, New Jersey, which is like, you know, the cultural epicenter of the drag world. And we met that night. We got to do a talk back with the kids. We did a show. And then afterwards, we were getting to know each other back at the hotel. She was like, you should do Drag Race. Have you ever thought about auditioning? And I was like, no, I'm a pageant girl. I don't know that Drag Race really kind of fits my personality. I was as yet undiagnosed autistic, trying to navigate life and drag with all the drama that comes along with that from a very weird point of view. You know, like everything seemed to be pulling against me doing things that I wanted to do. And I was first runner up at the Miss Continental Plus pageant 5 years in a row. And that year I was like, I'm not going to do anything else except focus on this pageant because I know the 6th year is the year that I win. Spoiler alert, it was not. I was actually second runner up that year. And I went, I've got to do something different. So in that time, Jujubee had kind of blown up the producer's phones at World of Wonder and said, call her and encourage her to audition. So they did. And one thing led to another. Like all the best things in my life have been when I have stepped out of the way and just let them happen. And my grandmother always called that blocking your blessings. She's like, don't block the blessings, just let them come to you. So I did. I got out of the way and I ended up on Drag Race thinking, oh, I'm going to go home first, but I will use what I have, what this platform is, and kind of take it from there. And then I think because I had no preconceived notions about what was going to happen next, I just kept doing well. I just kept throwing myself into whatever was next and accidentally made it to the top.
My God. When you look back 10 years later, what are some of the first memories that pop into your head when you think about season 7, whether it be filming it or appearing on it?
It was fun. It was so much fun. It was so scrappy back then. You know, I mean, and we all thought season 7, oh, we're so far into this Drag Race thing. How much longer of a life does it have? And honestly, we're like one of the old seasons now. We're one of the vintage seasons. We had the original workroom. You know, it's so wild to sit back and think about kind of what a lawless land it was back then. Nothing was union at that point. So filming could go anywhere from like 14 to 18 hours someday just to try to get everything we needed. Schedule was so tight. There weren't nearly as many PAs or producers or anybody on set. So there were a lot of times where like, We would just kind of wander off and steal pieces of the wall or steal light bulbs out of the main stage or like any of these things because we were left unattended in this world where it was just like a big drag playground. It was so much fun.
Oh my goodness, that's so cool. Yeah, this was still Logo, right? Logo TV. I remember also Untucked was like a YouTube show and in this different sort of lounge.
So what had happened with that was originally, like our first day or two of filming, it was the old Untucked format. And then I guess from what I'm kind of remembering from a decade ago, they lost the sponsorship from Interior Illusions or whatever it was, and they had to completely retool. So the next thing you know, we come in and everything's been stripped out, and now it's all right behind the workroom wall because, again, everything was so much more compact and tiny then. And so you walk on the other side of like where Rue's entrance staircase was, and there's suddenly this like backstage hallway with couches. And they were like, okay, well, this is where you are now. So just go in there and talk. And like I said, I'm diagnosed autistic at that point, didn't realize why all of it was so overwhelming in the moment. I would go out and smoke. And I was the only smoker when we started. But everybody saw, oh, well, she's getting like alone time. So maybe I'll go smoke with her. And the next thing you know, like the entire cast is out there. Trixie Mattel's taking a cigarette and just holding it, just so she could be out there in those moments. And then the cameras start coming out. So that Untucked. While I will never sit back and say, oh, it is an accurate reflection of what happened in that time, it was so funny to see how kind of raw and real it was because they didn't even know what they were doing. They were just following us. They're like, oh, they're on the move again. Oh, they got a fresh pack of cigarettes. Go follow them outside. And it was just, it was strange. Like everything was just changing. Season seven got such a bad rep when it came out because it was different. It was so different than any other season had been. It was the first season with Carson and Ross, and we didn't have Santino there, who had been a fixture since the beginning. The different types of challenges, different everything, the different Untucked. It was just a lot for fans to take in at the time. And now you look back on it and you're like, oh my gosh, that was the turning point of Drag Race. It really kind of turned it into like what the juggernaut it has become at this point.
Oh, absolutely. I'm suddenly like nostalgic for that time, even though I wasn't watching it in real time. It seems so much simpler and a little bit lighter. And I mean, the fans, you're talking about the fans like being very attached to it then. I mean, it's only quadrupled in the meantime now of how protective they are of it.
I don't think the fans are as protective of it now. Honestly, it felt like back during season seven, while there was still this great big divide every single week on every decision that was made of, oh, this person I thought was better, or this person shouldn't have done that, or whatever. It felt like it was very constructive, and it felt like, you know, this is our thing. This is our community's like pride and joy. So we have to uplift it and we have to protect it. So even when there were hateful things, it wasn't as divisive as it is now. And as it's gotten bigger globally and the fan base has started to skew a little bit younger, it has gotten a lot more, it's fine, I fucking hate it, burn it all to the ground sometimes. And that's really, it's disheartening as somebody that's been there for like such a long time as part of this to see how hard everybody that has been a part of it has worked to make it this beacon of like light and hope and happiness for our community, to see it taken on by others and kind of chipped away at.
Yeah,
That is disappointing because it is my favorite show. I think it's so many people's favorite show.
It's my favorite show. Like,
Yeah.
even before I was on it, I loved nothing more than to sit back and watch. Even the people that I hadn't met before or didn't know, I would sit back and cheer on all of these people because it's like, wow, whoever would have thought that us, who started working for $25 and two drink tickets, running across the street, dodging slurs and rocks and bottles from all these people that hated us for the love of doing drag, would be paid and celebrated in such an incredible way.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's still one of the only shows on TV with a primarily queer cast. Queer Eye is about to end. We got Drag Race. What else? You know what I mean? Like, it really is something that we need to uplift and celebrate.
Isn't it just a little bit weird, though, when you think about, like, coming into the birth of Drag Race, we were coming off of things like Will and Grace or the original Queer Eye, and it felt like there was this big gay renaissance, this boom. And then Drag Race happened, and it felt like a natural progression. It felt like, oh, this is just the next step to, like, the big gay takeover, which is the worst way to say it. But it felt like this gay renaissance, this revolution. And now that we're, you know, all these seasons in, all these years later, it feels like we've lost the things like Will and Grace, and we're losing the new Queer Eye. And it feels like representation is a lot more few and far between, which is surprising to me, and also makes me love and cherish Drag Race so much more.
Absolutely.
That is so interesting. I wonder if it's a sign of the times, you know, the political times.
Yeah.
Simultaneously, as we see gay characters being more tokenized. And I mean, Ryan Murphy doesn't have as many mainstream shows as he used to anymore. There are a lot of, like, mini series now, like No More Pose, No More Glee. Yeah. So I don't know. It's very interesting to think about.
It is. And I've sat and thought about it a lot, but there's no logical, like, all encompassing explanation that I can come up with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, okay. So we talked about you on season 7 of Drag Race. We've mentioned that you won All Stars just now, but I want to check in with you in general. We ask all of our guests how they're doing. Ginger, are you well?
I'm better than I've ever been. You know, other than my allergies kind of kicking my ass right now, I'm amazing. Like, if you had asked me this a year and a half ago, it would have been a very different answer. I was not doing well, just all around. And in that year and a half that I've really been kind of working on myself, and that's why I always say everything comes in its time, in its season, for its reason, if you don't block the blessings. And in that year and a half, I have lost 170 pounds with the help of my doctor, which, you know, that's nice. But on top of that, because of that, my blood pressure is now under control and I'm completely off of medication for that. My sugar's under control. My cholesterol's under control. I no longer have sleep apnea. So I'm actually getting sleep. You can't tell right here, but never slept. Like, everything was bad. And then I got really sick with COVID, which turned into pneumonia and put me in the hospital. And I thought that was it. And then getting that call to come back to do All Stars 10 was like the first time that I felt like I really had something to, like, kick me in the padded ass to get moving again. So now I, like, my health is great and I feel amazing. And, like, I just feel like I finally got out of my own way and the universe is taking over and really making me feel better than I ever have in my adult life.
You seem just like there's a lightness surrounding you and a joy, like, in just even in your smile. It's amazing. I'm happy for you.
Thank you. I'm happy for me too. And it sounds weird to say that, but I've never really been truly happy with myself, because I was always like, well, this could be better, or that could be better, or maybe I should do this or that. And now I'm just at the point where I'm like, no, bitch, you've done it. Like, you've done it. You've turned your life around. You're still working. You're still being successful and creating opportunities for so many other people. And that's what drag has always been about to me. That's how I measure my success, is how many opportunities can I create for other people? And now that I'm, like, able to do that, especially, like, with this Hocus Pocus live tour and these other things that we're doing, it's just so fulfilling. It's wonderful. It does. It makes me feel very happy and very light and very, like, secure in this moment.
That's amazing. You know, it's been so cool to see your journey. And even in, like, real time with the way that season 10 was filmed, with, like, part of it being last summer, a little after that time you mentioned, and then later. You know, I'm someone who goes through life in a bigger body myself. And so it's always been very inspiring to see you out there in a representative way, but also in, like, poking light fun at things and then you know, seeing that journey play out. So I just want to thank you for that.
Oh my gosh, of course.
How did you feel about that sort of being a focus on your transformation in, like, the back half of All Stars 10?
That is why I went back. I went back because, like I said, like, I needed a reason to really get my life together and to be able, that's the most exciting thing for me as a fan of the show, to sit back and watch, is I literally start this season at my worst. I was 340 pounds and couldn't breathe, and, like, just everything was bad. But you can see me go from the worst version of myself to the best version of myself all in 6 episodes. And like, it's so special for me to have shared that. And that was the thing, you know, they always ask in the interviews, you know, was it everything that you thought it would be? Was winning everything that you hoped it would be for 10 years? And yes, it is and it was, but no, it was so much more because immediately I started getting thousands of messages from people that were like, you know, it's always so fantastic to see the girl that you're rooting for win, but there's something so personal about your victory because I feel like I have been on the ups and downs and through the trenches with you for 10 years. For 10 years, I've been up and down with you, and this just let me know. It's just never too late. It's never too late. Never be counted out. Just keep showing up and keep trying to be the best version of yourself. And eventually, if you get out of your own way, good things will come.
That's incredible. That's like that song, I'm Still Here from Follies.
Exactly. Good times and bum times. I've seen them all, and I'm still here.
Period.
Have you ever done that in any of your shows?
No, I haven't. But you know what my first memory of that song is Camp.
Oh,
The
yeah.
movie Camp.
Oh, yeah.
And now I can't listen to Ladies Who Lunch without hearing that overlapping at the end of it. That movie's brilliant and does not get enough talk. Like, that movie is so good. It was so formative for me as a child.
Wasn't that Anna Kendrick?
It was Anna Kendrick. There was baby Anna Kendrick. Poison in that blonde bitch. So she could take her role. And I was like, oh, she's got some chutzpah, as my husband says.
Yeah. What were some of your other big inspirations when you were younger? We do actually like to ask all of our guests about what got them into the arts. We borrow a ring of keys from Fun Home because we think maybe it was a moment of recognition. Maybe you were watching camp. Maybe you were just singing in the back seat of the car, whatever it might be that inspired you to jump into the performing arts in some way. Do you feel like you have a ring of keys?
Oh, absolutely. And mine's a little bit different than everybody else's. I actually grew up on stage because I come from a family that is not theatrical. There is no talent for singing, dancing, acting, or anything in my entire family. It was very easy for my sister to convince me that I was adopted when I was growing up because of
Oh,
such.
no.
But our local community theater had put this ad in the paper and said that they were looking for somebody to play the baby in Fiddler on the Roof. And my mom was like, well, I've got to go back to work. We can't afford babysitters or daycare. So these people have been vetted. They're veterans of the community. Everybody knows them. I'm sure it's safe to drop the baby off and just let him play this role in the show. So it was free babysitting for my mother to volunteer me to play this baby. And then once you have something in a community theater that checks that box, all of a sudden they're in everything. So my mom was just dropping me off at the community theater every single day. So eventually I entered the children's theater programs, which I later took over and taught myself. But I grew up on stage at the Bay Street Players in Eustis, Florida. So I don't ever remember a time not being on stage, ever.
That's so nice. Do you have any favorite onstage performances from when you were a kid into being a teenager?
The very first big solo that I had in a main stage production was Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas and this like Home for the Holidays, I think it was called. I don't remember. It was something like that. And it was the first time that me as a 14-year-old got to like really show off where my voice had come. And I remember everybody that had been watching me for years do little funny bit parts or kids songs or any of these things. I remember them just like staring at me and crying and getting standing ovations for singing this Judy Garland song that I was so obsessed with my whole life. So that was really a transformative moment for me that kind of like pushed me into the more adult roles at the theater.
Wow. I mean, that is one of the best songs of all time. Anyway,
Ever. Ever.
ever. Did you dream of Broadway? Like, is it still a dream? Do you want to end up in a New York stage in that way?
Yeah, when I was 18 years old on my birthday, I sold everything that I had, including my car. I got like $5,000, showed up to New York City with a backpack of money, and nothing else, literally nothing else. No job, no place to stay, nothing. And I just started pounding the pavement. I had gone to beauty school, so I was like, anything you need, I can do hair, I can do, I could sell accessories, I can do makeup, I could do whatever you want me to do. And I stumbled into a job at Lion King with merchandising, mostly because the manager there had this fetish for Southern accents, not like in a sexual way, but just like I learned very early with him that if I just laid it on thick and I thought, well, hi Keith, how you doing this morning? He'd be like, oh my gosh, you can have whatever shift you want this week. You're so charming. You could sell anything. So I got that job. Merchandising for Beauty and the Beast was the first one. And then I went into Lion King after that. And I lived in New York City for 3 years. Tried so hard to make a Broadway career happen, but 18 years old, you're literally like sharing a bunk bed with four other people in a studio apartment, but still trying to like work all day, every day just to pay for that. And then I eventually got kidnapped at gunpoint and robbed. And then 2 days later, somebody tried to rob me at knife point. And I was just like, I'm sorry, somebody got me with a gun 2 days ago. And the guy literally goes, oh, I'm sorry, dude. Like, go about your business. So I was just like, this is so overwhelming for me at this age. I'm not accomplishing anything that I set out to do. So after 3 years, I threw in the towel and I went home, which was Leesburg, Florida. And I was like, well, this is too slow now. So I ended up landing in Orlando. So I've been there for 25 years now, and that's where Ginger was born. That's where all of my success really started coming out. So Broadway is still a goal and a dream, but it feels like in order to get there, I've had to take all of these detours in my life.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Well, I'm so sorry that those horrible things happened to you in the city when you were young.
Oh, I'm not. They're great stories. I wrote about them more in depth in my book, but they're great stories that really, like, as scary as they were in the moment, they really gave me a lot of life lessons that I have taken with me and used outside of those situations too.
Yeah.
So there's sometimes where I have felt like I have been kidnapped and held hostage, especially on Drag Race with of season seven, especially where they take you and then immediately take your phone and you don't know that this is coming. Your phone is gone. The phones in the hotel rooms are ripped out. All you've got is what is on the TV in the hotel. You have no lifeline to the outside world. You don't know what's happening. And it really kind of feels like this prison hostage situation for the first couple of days because you can't get any yard time. You can't go out unless you're smoking a cigarette. And so that's when you turn into a freight train. You're just sucking them down by the pool because you're like, this is the only freedom I'm getting right now.
Ginger, are you still a smoker?
Yes, but don't yell at me,
No,
please.
never, never. All right, I won't. You need your yard time
I'm
in some
trying.
way or another.
Well, I'm trying. So I don't drink at all anymore. I don't eat sugar. I don't eat carbs. It feels like this and coffee are all that I have left, are cigarettes and coffee.
Gotta have some things we enjoy, right?
Yeah, but fans will be glad to know that I had made the promise that cigarettes are the next thing to go for me, but I have cut back for sure. It also helps here in P-Town that they don't sell menthol, which is what I've always smoked. So you can only get what you smuggle in. And I've been making these 3 packs last me for a month so far. So I've definitely cut back with an emphasis on quitting, but
Yes.
it's the only thing getting me through some days.
I get it. Listen, listen. Okay, wait. So you're in P-Town now. You've been doing this residency all summer, right? Now, how many years have you been doing it?
This is my fifth summer in P-Town, and to be honest with you, it's like gay heaven for me. I love it. It's my favorite place in the world. The people that come here are just the nicest people ever. Like the people that are here all summer. And it's so nice to be in this community where you can't throw a stone without hitting some form of famous drag queen. And they're all doing shows and they're all so different, but they're also heartfelt and they're also eye-opening. It's amazing to be in such a creative, artistic community. And then every week, as far as audiences go, you have a new crop of people that are popping in. So it's like, even though we've been doing the same songs and the same routines night after night, it feels so fresh in front of a new set of eyes every single week.
That's so cool. I want to make it there one year. I mean, Connor and I have never been to P-Town, but I think we would be in heaven, as you said.
Oh, I think you absolutely would. I think you both would also thrive here
Oh my
and have
God.
to protect yourselves from everybody. Oh, you're so cute. You're so sweet. You're so
Oh
adorable.
my God, Ginger, you'd have to kidnap us and hide us in your
Well,
P-Town estate.
I'll just put you in the show.
Oh, there we go.
Oh my God. Don't get us too excited.
I've heard stories about like Tammy Brown and other queens kind of having to be out on the streets in P-Town promoting their shows. Is that still the way that it is?
It is. I mean, well, when you think about it, like P-Town is really just one long street. It's Commercial Street, and everything takes place from one end of that to the next. So when you've got 30 shows in a day from all these different venues, all these different performers, yeah, like the market is a little saturated. So you do have to get out there. We call it barking. You got to get out there and bark people down and beg them and plead with them to please come and see your show. I don't like to do that, not because I don't see the value in it. I absolutely do. But I also don't like to appear on the street and drag because I feel like that's not fair to the people who have paid to see me. I feel like I want to save that moment, that first moment of seeing Ginger Minj on stage for being on stage. It just kind of like breaks that magic. So I'll go out there out of drag. That's the good thing about Drag Race, I guess, too, is that they show us out of drag so many times. People know what we look like. But I'll do it out of drag, but I don't like to do it in drag because I feel like it cheapens it for the people who pay.
That's totally fair. And what is the show that you're currently putting on in P-Town?
Listen, I promised myself a decade ago, I'm not going to be one of those girls who gets on Drag Race and then does a one-woman show about being on Drag Race. And for 10 years, I have not. But I just won, so fuck it. So, we were talking a little bit earlier about the drama that comes along with being on this show. And there's that thing where, no matter who wins or who loses, everybody with a Twitter account is going to have an opinion. And a lot of these people haven't been on the journey since season seven till now. So it felt like when there was so much discourse over, does she deserve it? Did she win? Should she have won? It made me like roll over in my head this decade of Drag Race, these four seasons that I have been a part of. And I went, you know what? Whether they think that I should have or not, it doesn't change the fact that I did and I will have always won. But maybe now's the time to talk about that decade of my life and really put it into perspective for the people who love it and the people who don't, why I truly have like deserved this win. And it's been very interesting. It's called It's Raining Minge, and it's all about my time with the show and what the ups and the downs have been through 10 years and four seasons. And people come away from it every night like crying and going, oh my God, I like, even as a fan for all of these years, I didn't realize everything that went into this. Or it was so nice to sit back and relive Glamazonian Airways and Eggs, 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 and Where the Hell My Phone, like all of these moments that I loved in the moment, but maybe had kind of filed back in my brain. So it's traumatic and thrilling and incredible to relive it all every single night.
Oh my God. I'm sure it's also a little healing too, to put it all out there.
It is very cathartic. After I actually leading up to the week before I even knew if I won or not, I was talking to my therapist and I was like, it's just so crazy that the only thing worse than doing bad on Drag Race is doing well. Because it feels like when you're actually doing well and you're in your element, people feel like they don't want to cheer you on. And she said, who cares? Who cares? You have to learn to cheer yourself on because you know how hard you've worked for this. You know how much you've put into it. And and only you know what this means to you. So to let anybody else who doesn't have any stakes in it really have any say over how you feel about it is unfair to you. So that's when I started going, okay, you're right. I have to reframe this for myself from a positive perspective. I can't keep being that person that allows negativity to creep in, especially when I've worked so hard to kick all of the negativity out of my life over the last couple of years. So I started reliving those moments and going, holy shit. Yeah, like there's a lot of trauma here, but there's also so much joy. And I want to share that with people. So it has been very healing.
I'm happy to hear that. And I'm sure to be in front of audiences as opposed to like, you might see the reaction online or hear from people
Oh, yeah.
virtually. To then be experiencing it in person, I'm sure has also been great to realize, like, oh, when we get some fresh air and
Yeah.
see people, it's a little bit different then.
Oh, and I learned that on season seven because, like, season seven, the fan response wasn't the warmest towards me. But like I said, I was trying to navigate all of that as well. And also, the week of the season seven finale, I talk about this in the show a little bit, but my grandfather who raised me died. My relationship of 11 years ended abruptly, and I lost the crown all within 7 days in front of the world, never having been in a situation like that before. So, trying to navigate all of that while staying positive was just, it was daunting. Like, it was so, oh God, I'm gonna get emotional talking about it, but it was such a dark period in my life because I didn't have the tools. I wasn't equipped to really navigate that. So I let a lot of the negativity win, and it pushed me into a bad place, into a person that I never set out to be. I never intended to be and never wanted to be. And it took me a very long time and a lot of work and healing to kick all that negativity out. So now it's so interesting when people, like the fans who are fans of Drag Race now, to go back and watch a season that they probably weren't even, old enough to understand when it came out. You've got these 15, 16-year-olds that watch season seven from 10 years ago, and they like cling to these moments or things that were said a decade ago, and that colors their opinion of you forever. I mean, and it's true because first opinions are everything in the world, but it's also something that I've worked so hard to shake for a decade, those few things, like those really awful moments that I had, because it's not the person that I am. It was the person that I was in that moment, but it's not who I am now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I mean, you have proven so much over the last decade of what a versatile and incredible performer you are off screen, and on screen. I mean, getting to see you pop up over the years has been amazing, but you've been able to bring your talent to the world. And I mean, I know you've done a lot of the different, World of Wonder type tours and things like that that have gone around with
Yeah.
the other queens. But a couple of years ago, I got to see you come to Columbus
Oh,
and you did like the
yeah.
Hocus Pocus 2. It was like a viewing. I think the movie had maybe just come out or maybe the.
Yeah, it was like the week that the movie came out.
Yeah.
It was like September.
Yes, it was September.
It was the second week of September because it was right around my birthday. Yes, I
Yes.
remember this. And I
Oh.
remember that the microphones would not work. They were the bane of my existence at Access Nightclub, which I love. I love Access and I love being there. But that was the first time that we were like, oh, we're gonna do live performances. And we got there and they were like, oh, like the microphones are just not cooperating today, which it ended up turning into a very different show than we had intended, but it was still just like so great because the energy at Access Nightclub in Columbus is so insane. It's insane at all times. It's so good.
Well, it was amazing to finally see you live.
Thank you.
This Hocus Pocus live tour that you're doing now, is it an evolution of that show, or can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to. So, my last day on set with Bette Midler, she was giving me all sorts of life lessons through the day. I mean, she had decided that she really liked me early on in the process. And my close-up was the last shot of that scene. It's like 4 a.m., 2.5 weeks, all these long overnights outside in Newport, Rhode Island, and they were trying to cheat my shot. I didn't know what the fuck that meant at that time. Like, I've done filming, of course, but I didn't know exactly what that meant. And she said, wait, bring the monitors, bring the monitors. She's got them set up in front of her. She goes, no, that light's wrong. Move that there. Bring this one in here. Push the camera in from this angle. We'll be in the trailer. She grabs my hand, drags me off stage, and she goes, I'm not always going to be around. So you need to start looking out for these things for yourself. And I went, okay, I guess Bette Midler is my new drag mother. And as we're sitting there in the trailer waiting for them to change these lights, she goes, I've seen a lot of drag queens do me, but I like the way you do me. I want to see you do something with this, like a play or so whatever, just do something with it. So those words kept ringing through my ears for a couple of months. I'm like, well, what do I do? What do I do? My husband and I, 7 years ago, we had started Fruit Wine Productions, which is our way of creating work for people within the queer community. And it started with classic television shows like Golden Girls and Munsters and Gilligan's Island and all of those, and re-examining them from a queer perspective. I mean, we don't necessarily turn any of the characters queer. That's not the agenda, but we try to look at it from how we would approach things. And we had a lot of success with it. We created a lot of work for a lot of local talent. And I said, this is like the perfect marriage of both of those things. Why don't we take Hocus Pocus, re-examine it so it's not just a rehash of the same thing from one or two, make it its own, and then create some more queer art for the world. We did that first tour, which was kind of thrown together in the best way possible, which you saw, which did really well. So we took the profit from that, reinvested it into the next year. That got even better. And then this year I went, okay, you just won this money. Like even before the $200,000 at the end, I had won the lip sync money and I went, you can finally afford to really do this, like do it really well. So I called Jujubee, I called Saphira Cristal, and Landon Sider, who is one of my favorite drag artists of all time, just so insanely talented, called them and said, you know, I think I've got the money. How about we try to do this, like really do it? We pitched it. AEG, who is like one of the biggest touring companies in the world, went, yes, we'll buy it. It has been going so well before we even opened. Like the day after I won, we sold 2,500 tickets. We've sold over 11,000 tickets at this point. So AEG came to us and they were like, there's some clamoring for some other places if you don't mind extending. Now, a Wednesday, we make our official announcement. We're doing 10 more cities. 10 more cities on a second leg of this tour. It's just become like its own thing. And it's so incredible. Like, it's like proud mama moment for me to sit back and go, oh my gosh, we're creating not only queer art in a time where we really need it, but we're creating work for queer artists in a time where it's drying up and people are trying to take it away. So it's really special, and I'm very excited for it. It's better and bigger and more incredible than it's ever
Oh
been.
my God.
We have original music this year.
Oh my God. I hope we're able to see it. What can you tease for audiences? Are there any moments from the movie that you're really excited to see, or movies, I should say, that you're excited to see play out on stage?
There are references to the movies, of course. There are those moments that people expect. I mean, it's like Rocky Horror, it's a cult classic, but so is Drag Race. So there's like a couple of like well-placed Drag Race references that if you're a fan of the show, you're going to get. But if you're not a fan, it's not going to take you out of the moment. We have worked so hard to make this a pop culture explosion. And there are songs that people love that they know. There are original songs, like I was just telling you about, that fit totally into that world. It is a brand new adventure with three of your favorite witches, played by three of your favorite drag queens. There's no way you can lose. No way. Just get a ticket and come, because it's going to be something that you don't expect, and you're going to be so excited that you took the chance.
That was like the best pitch I've ever heard to go buy tickets to anything, Ginger. So, first of all, amazing.
Well,
Second,
good.
yeah, but adding 10 more cities on top of this tour that's already popped off, you are so loved. And the art that you're making is bringing so much joy to people at the right time. So, I'm just so happy for you.
Well, we are so grateful for all of the performances that you've given us, the iconic moments on television, on stage. I know that there's so much more to come. We're sadly wrapping up here, Ginger, but before we say goodbye, we do like to end on a dose of drama. It's our titular segment where we maybe mention something that's on our hearts' minds. It could be a rant, a rave, a suggestion, anything like that.
In preparing to chat with you, I was going through, you know, top Gingerman YouTube moments, all this different stuff. And I found this video of you singing I Am What I Am from Lakaja Fo in front of Harvey. And first of all, I cried. But second of all, you are such an amazing singer and performer.
Thank you.
Oh my God.
Like I said, I came tap dancing out of the womb. I was the theater baby. So I have always found my comfort and my peace center stage in the spotlight. Even you being sick, you know, we had to reschedule this because I was a little under the weather the other day. But my best friend Gidget and I, who you actually saw play Mary, she was my Mary the first 2 years. She's been my best friend for almost 30 years at this point. Like, we started drag together and we always have this thing, like, no matter how bad you're feeling, you always have Dr. Spotlight. Dr. Spotlight will hit you and heal you with that beautiful beam, and you can get through any show, because that's where my comfort zone is on stage. It's when you take me outside of the spotlight, out of drag or out of character, that I start to go, oh God, I don't know how to deal with the rest of the world.
I'm actually going to use this time to ask you about something that I discovered in my research of you that I'm wondering if this was drama. You played Mrs. Lovett in a production of Sweeney Todd at one point. Stephen Sondheim himself ended up having to chime in on this, and RuPaul allegedly saw the footage.
Yes, absolutely. So there was this production of Sweeney Todd that was being directed by a friend of mine. His name is Derek Kritzer, and it was in Orlando. Well, he was having issues with his Sweeney not being able to retain the music. I mean, it's Sondheim. You know, it's really difficult to learn in such a short amount of time. So his Sweeney needed to be replaced, and his Mrs. Lovett in solidarity had quit with his Sweeney. He hired this guy named Stephen Jones, who had played Sweeney when I was Toby, like 10 years prior to that. And he said, you know, I don't know what we're going to do. It's 2 weeks until the show. I don't have a Mrs. Lovett. Stephen said, well, Josh did Toby when I was Sweeney the last time. And I know he does drag now. And I know he's kind of like taking off here in Orlando. Why don't you have him do it? Because he already knows the show. So Derek called me and I was like, yes, absolutely. Count me in. I know it like the back of my hand. I go in and we have like 2 days of rehearsal. It gets announced that I'm doing it. And apparently there were some women in town who were very upset that they felt I had taken the role, even though they weren't the right type, or they hadn't auditioned, or they couldn't sing it, or any of it. There was no way any of them were going to step up to the plate to do it. They had contacted MTI. MTI had this clause in the contract about no drag performers playing the role. So they sent us a cease and desist. And we fought back with, well, I'm a non-binary performer. So when I do perform in drag, I'm not doing it for the camp factor. I'm doing it as an artist. I'm doing it as an extension of my femininity. So it's being approached from a very real place. But they said, okay, well, Stephen's estate says film all of the musical numbers and some of the scenes, send it to us, and he'll decide yes or no. So I quickly got into Mrs. Lovett drag, filmed all of these. It felt like doing a Drag Race audition video all over again. It was so haphazard and so last minute and so much. I get it all done, send it in, and not even an hour later, we get this email that says, Stephen says thumbs up, you're good to go. So I got to audition for Stephen Sondheim, and I guess he liked enough of what I was doing as Mrs. Lovett to give it the go-ahead for the little production. It caught on like wildfire in Orlando. It started picking up all these headlines. So, and then the reviews came out and they were like, what a revelation. So brilliant, so talented. Looks like Linda Evangelista, a model. And so the little video clips started going around, and it was brought to my attention years later that RuPaul had seen video clips of me as Mrs. Lovett and video clips of me as Hedwig and Hedwig and the Angry Inch, which I had done for 2.5 years in Orlando. And she was like, oh, I like that. I like that. I want that. I like the headlines that come along with it. Let's get it. So that's how I ended up getting Mrs. Lovett and it picking up traction. But there is one thing that I do, like drama-wise, that I do want to talk about. Right.
Yes.
Now.
Give it to us.
You know, I'm an Orlando girly. I have been there for 25 years, born and raised in Florida. After Pulse happened, you brought up the I Am What I Am performance.
Yeah.
That was in tribute to Harvey, but also a last minute tribute to Pulse because it happened 3 days after the shootings. And it's the best and worst night of my life, you know, singing that song because I was so nervous. I knew there was so much writing on it and I wanted to do well for so many people. And I just remember shaking like a leaf and taking a Xanax that I think Tatiana, or no, Alyssa had given me a Xanax. I took it, chased it with a shot of whiskey, and I'm still shaking like a leaf. I don't remember the performance at all. I just remember hitting the final pose, making a beeline for the door to go smoke a cigarette. And they're like, Harvey wants to talk to you. And I was like, then he can come out here. Not even thinking, oh my God, you just told Harvey Fierstein to come outside and find you. So I'm sitting there smoking and pacing. I have so many emotions going on. And he's like, honey, you made us all so happy. And it was such a moment of like peace and clarity, you know? I felt very proud and very happy. And then what I noticed in the Orlando community after Pulse was even the people that didn't necessarily advocate for us and our community or understand us, they fought for us. We had the Westboro Baptist Church coming in and trying to protest, and we had all of the like people from the straight community who had never stepped foot into ours, making these giant angel wings that went 9 feet so they could make this protective wall around all of us who were mourning the loss of our community and the loss of our friends. And that beautiful rainbow crosswalk was put there as a monument, as a memorial. We knew people, I knew people who we lost that night. I was supposed to be there, but I was on the Battle of the Seasons tour. So I couldn't, you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
I could have easily been working that night. So for something that has been such a bringing together of our community and an olive branch to the outside community towards us, it's really disheartening to see the bullshit political drama that is happening with the governor who shall not be named right now, saying we don't want crosswalks that politicize anything. We don't want politics in our crosswalks. You're making this a political issue. This is not the political issue. That rainbow crosswalk is a beautiful memorial to people that we lost, constituents of yours that you lost. You're like, you literally, these are your people. Your people, and you're trying to erase them, and you're trying to erase us. And this is my very long-winded way of saying we will not be erased. I thought it was very beautiful that all of the community got out there with chalk and recolored it. And now they're wasting taxpayer dollars having five police officers in these patrol cars sitting in the Dunkin' Donuts parking lot. How fitting, I guess, whatever. And threatening the people that are rechalking. Don't you dare pull out paint. If you pull out paint, you know, we're going to have to arrest you. What the fuck? It's paint. It's color. It's a memorial. Get over it and start supporting people. Start supporting your community. I have so many thoughts on this. As you can tell, I cannot articulate clearly what I want to say with this, but it is just so baffling to me how much of a pawn and a scapegoat our community is being used as for no reason. Like, I'm just pissed off about it. I'm really pissed off about it.
It is extremely distressing.
It's horrible. And I feel like you did get your point across really well, Ginger. And it's disgusting what's happening in our country. And I
It
really
is
don't know what has
disgusting.
to change for people to. I mean, we're all seeing it happen before our very eyes, but
Yeah.
it's really, really, really a hard time.
The one thing that I want to say, though, is honestly, Orlando has proven time and time again that it is not to be fucked with. And I think it's going to take more instances like this where people are fighting back. We're immediately hitting the pavement, quite literally, and fighting back in ways that make a difference. Do not let them erase you. I made a promise, like, as much as the crown and scepter of RuPaul's Drag Race can mean, to me, it means that this is a platform that I've never taken lightly and I'm never going to take it lightly. If you love me or you hate me, you're going to get sick of me because I am going to continue to speak out. We're in a time right now where they are literally trying to erase us every single day. And I'm not going to be erased. Drag has always been the ones at the front of the community, our drag and our trans brothers and sisters holding hands and fighting. That's what we know how to do. That's what we're going to do. And if you continue to pick the fight, we will continue to show the fuck up and show the fuck out.
Period. Mic drop. Well said. Thank you so much for sharing all that, saying all that, standing on business. And we love you so much. Our queen.
I love you too. I have had such a good time.
Our winner. Oh my God. Everybody has to go see you this fall in Hocus Pocus Live. You also are still performing in P-Town this week, and you'll be at 54 Below in New York at the end of November. You're booked and busy, Mama.
Yeah, I've got some movie stuff that I'm doing right after Hocus Pocus, between that and 54 Below. And then Broadway. I've got a couple of offers on the table that we're kind of trying to figure out some timing, some logistics for. So hopefully one of those works out and I can finally make my Broadway debut.
That is
Yes.
amazing. Your reign is going to be so iconic. It already is. As you're an advocate, you're an artist, you're creating so much amazing things for us, Ginger. We're so grateful. And this was honestly such a dream for us. So thanks for doing this with us.
Oh, the dream was mine. Thank you. It's raining, Minge.
And everyone can follow you're just at Ginger Minge on all social media, right?
Some of it's at the Ginger Minge. Bianca Del Rio made me do that shit like 10 years ago. So I don't know. I don't know. Just search Ginger Minge. I'm the one that looks like me.
Right. We'll blame it on Bianca. Yeah. And while everyone's following Ginger, they've got to follow us. We're at the Drama Podcast. Connor's at Connor McDowell. I'm at Dylan
And I'm Andy McDowell.
Stop. I love that.
I want to be a McDowell so bad now.
You are an honorary McDowell. We could be family. I mean, look at
We could look at the hair.
I
Damn.
know. I know. Well, it's just family this week on the podcast. And Connor, I will see you next time.
Drama.
Drama.